You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. I don't think you appreciate the gravity of this situation. Part 2. Fighting on the moon, on an asteroid, in zero gravity, and on Kepler-438b. In an earlier podcast, I talked about difficulties you might encounter if you tried to fight on Mars. Today, I want to carry this theme to other locations with other levels of gravity. Just as in the earlier podcast, we're going to keep it simple by imagining that you are not wearing a space suit. Instead, we'll imagine that you're in a habitat in which you can breathe and move around in your shirt sleeves. Let's start on the moon. When I discussed fighting on Mars, which has a gravity of about 40% that of the Earth, I covered the subject of what I perceived to be some unforeseen problems for the fighter, foremost of which would be the slipperiness he or she would discover that lower gravity imparted to the Martian surface. Gravity on the moon is even lower, 1/6 that of the Earth, or about 16%. That's well under half the gravity of Mars. But to keep things simple, let's call it half that of Mars. All the problems that I described for the fighter from Earth trying to fight on Mars would be made twice as bad on the moon. The surface would be twice as slippery. The difference between your weight and your mass would be twice as great. Gravity would be different, but momentum and inertia would stay the same. One potentially happy circumstance would be that you could leap even higher on the moon than you could on Mars, where you could already leap pretty high. Although it's important to realize that it would also take you longer to come down. Once you give yourself over to gravity, you can't change the rate at which you fall. Let's go even farther and suppose you're standing on an asteroid. A very large asteroid would not be that different from being on the moon. But if you're standing on a quite small asteroid, it would be possible to jump completely off of it, so that you're now flying through space and not drawn back by the feeble gravity of the asteroid. In a case like this, you'd better hope you are wearing a spacesuit. Fighting under those conditions would be interesting, would it not? Which takes us to fighting in zero gravity. This has been a subject of fascination to me and other martial arts nerds for decades. Empty hand fighting can be divided into striking and grappling. Doing either one well requires the ability to move in the environment in which you find yourself. Moving in zero gravity requires that you unlearn most of what you know about moving under gravity. One of the first things to ascertain when trying to move in zero gravity is the location and arrangement of handles, surfaces, and open spaces. There are two types of movement in zero G. The first is straight line movement. In other words, traveling from one place to another. The other is rotational movement, which means in essence that you are spinning. Much of the time you'll be doing both. In other words, traveling in a straight line while also rotating. Because you're not standing on anything, if rotation is part of your movement, it could just as easily be on any of the three possible axes of rotation. In other words, you could be spinning on your longitudinal axis like a top, or spinning on your transverse axis as if doing repeated somersaults, forward or backward, or spinning on your medial axis as if doing repeated cartwheels, or any diagonal combination of these three. In order to move from one place to another in zero gravity, you need something or someone to push against, or to pull yourself in with, or you need to have some reaction mass to eject. I'll explain later what I mean by ejecting reaction mass. Straight line movement in zero gravity is thus much like swimming or flying. If there's a nearby handle, you can grab it and use it to pull yourself in, or rotate yourself. You can push off from a surface, like a wall, or push off from your opponent, also causing him to move away in the process. Once you have pushed off, it's important to remember that you will not stop moving or change direction until you've traveled to another handle which you can grab, or object against which you can push, or again, unless you eject reaction mass. The notion of not being able to slow down, speed up, or change direction once you start flying through space in zero gravity is counterintuitive, but it's the truth of the physics nevertheless. If you are spinning as all or part of your motion, you will continue to spin repeatedly without stopping until you can touch a handle or surface, or until you precisely eject some reaction mass. It's also the case that if you find yourself floating motionless without any solid surface within reach and no reaction mass to eject, you are helplessly stranded. When you're stranded in zero gravity, a millimeter is as good as a mile. You can flail around all you want, but you will not move even a thousandth of an inch closer to a usable surface or handle. Because of this, I imagine that developing the ability to strand an opponent in a fight could be quite useful. Despite the fact that he is fully conscious, he is effectively out of the fight. It would also be possible to strand someone while they're spinning in place, rotating helplessly and continuously. How humiliating and disorienting. As a result, a very important part of assessing your environment in zero-gravity combat is to determine whether any of the spaces are large enough that you could potentially be stranded. Earlier, I mentioned ejecting reaction mass in order to make yourself move. A simple example of this would be if you were to have a bowling ball in your hands and then suddenly and sharply push it away from yourself, as if passing a basketball to a teammate. Not only would the bowling ball fly away from you, you would move in the opposite direction, albeit at a much lower speed than that of the bowling ball because you have much more mass. When you shoved the bowling ball away, you were ejecting reaction mass. The bowling ball had mass, and your body moved as a reaction to its ejection. The most commonly used and understood form of reaction mass is the burned rocket fuel escaping from the nozzle of a rocket engine. Of course, you can't carry around a rocket engine or a bunch of bowling balls. A more appropriate form of reaction mass for an object the size of a human is in the form of tanks of compressed gases. These are commonly used when executing spacewalks for astronauts. You may not think that the physical mass of gas being blown out through a nozzle would amount to much, but it will move a human-sized body through space, although probably more slowly than you would like or imagine. Because of this slowness, it would probably have little value in a combat setting. If you found yourself stranded, one solution could be to purse your lips and blow as hard as possible, using the gas in your lungs as reaction mass. If, however, you did this with your body stretched out, as if lying or standing, it would only serve to cause you to begin to spin in place in a continuous, slow cartwheel or backflip motion. That's because your mouth is too far away from your center of mass. A solution to this problem would be to curl into a ball with your knees up tightly against your chest and blow hard between your knees in the direction of your feet. While not perfect, this should eventually get you to a usable surface or handle. Again, though, it will be too slow to make any difference in a fight. But at least you would no longer be stranded. Similarly, if you are sophomoric enough to consider farting as a form of propulsion, it would first be necessary to have the pressure built up in your intestines, to have no pants on, and to remember that you can compress your lips much more precisely and tightly than you can compress your anal sphincter muscles. And again, it would impart movement much too slow to make any difference in a fight, other than the noxious effect of your flatulence on the opponent. Actually, I included this particular section mostly for the entertainment of my secret sound engineer, the Diapered Viking, who is a true connoisseur of toilet humor. Fart jokes aside, let's get back to fighting. Striking in zero gravity would be challenging. If you hold onto a handle and your target is cooperative enough to be in range, you could conceivably load a kick by pulling your knees up tightly to your chest. If your kick strikes your opponent near the center of mass, you will inflict whatever damage may result and send your opponent flying away from you, unless he is anchored to a handle. The fight can't resume until the two of you come back within range of each other. If you strike the opponent away from his center of mass, you will inflict whatever damage that occurs and cause your opponent to begin spinning in space, while also traveling away from you. The farther your target point is from the opponent's center of mass, the more your strike will cause spin and the less it will cause him to move away. This is one method by which, with a lucky or very practiced motion, you could strand the opponent in a spinning state. If it were possible to securely attach your feet to a wall, say by the use of some sort of stirrup or Velcro, and again if your opponent was cooperative enough to be within range, you could execute a similar strike with your fist, with similar results. It would also be possible to strike an opponent by pushing off from a surface towards them before flailing out with a fist, elbow, knee, or foot. Again, this would take quite a bit of practice to learn to do well. On Earth, most power striking techniques utilize a combination of rotation of your body and a straight line driving motion of your center of mass. When you punch someone with a straight right hand, you drive your weight straight towards the opponent, while also whirling your body on its long axis to generate more striking power. This combination of both linear and rotational striking power would be quite difficult to execute in zero gravity. Once you have pushed off from the wall and are flying towards the opponent, you now have no ability to begin to rotate. If you start the rotation as you push off from the wall, you've got to calculate your rotation perfectly so that your fist or foot arrives at the target on time. Failure to do so could mean that you go flying into the opponent and strike them with your head, back, or butt, or some other undesirable body part, instead of your fist or foot. Because of these difficulties in striking, I would imagine that grappling is even more important in zero gravity than it is under normal Earth gravity. Of course, you can forget throws, takedowns, and holding the opponent down. There is no down in zero gravity. One similarity to grappling in Earth's gravity would be the desirability of getting to the opponent's back and securing a chokehold with your legs hooked around him. The lack of gravity would make it far more difficult to escape from this position than when back on Earth. I imagine there would be a great deal of hand fighting as you face one another, not unlike two football linemen struggling. A tactic that can happen on Earth would probably become more common in zero gravity, that tactic being driving your opponent against a wall in order to disorient and cause damage. It would be harder to use judo-style breakfall skills to lessen the damage of this impact, because you are not accelerating towards the ground as when falling, and thus your timing, learned in practicing judo, would be of little use to avoid damage from crashing into the surface. Because of all of these and other factors, I submit that entirely new styles of martial arts will be developed for coping with an enemy in zero gravity. Finally, what about fighting on a world whose gravity is greater than that of Earth? Over the last few decades, astronomers have been searching for planets circling stars other than our sun. These are called extrasolar planets. So far, they've discovered almost 2,000 of them. A small number of them appear to be somewhat Earth-like. One of these is the planet Kepler-438b. It circles the star Kepler-438 in the constellation Lyra. Its gravity is about 1.3 times that of Earth. A man who weighs 170 pounds on Earth would weigh 221 pounds on Kepler-438b. Most of the problems that I described in fighting on Mars or on the Moon would be opposite on this planet. The problem would no longer be a slippery surface. Footing would be fine indeed. Even on an icy surface, your extra weight would increase the traction. The problem here would be defeating your opponent before the higher gravity defeats your cardiovascular system. If you've ever experienced exercising while wearing a weight vest, in this case, a 50-pound weight vest, you know that you will fatigue quickly. Waste and inefficiency of motion would carry a much higher price on Kepler 438b. Striking techniques should work fairly well. Your limbs would still have the same mass that they would on Earth. In addition, the opponent's body may well take more damage from your strikes because the extra gravity will cause less of the kinetic energy of your strike to be wasted in knocking the opponent away and more of it to go into causing damage to his tissues. Grappling techniques may change somewhat. Throws and takedowns would become more difficult because the gravity of the planet is literally pulling your opponent more firmly down into the surface, making it more difficult to either lift him or knock his base from beneath him. If you do manage to get on top of your opponent on the ground in a hold-down position, you will immediately feel one of the only benefits of fighting in increased gravity. If you have even average skills at holding an opponent down, it should be possible to quickly wear out most of them. As I often preach to my jiu-jitsu students, your weight never gets tired. If your adversary's first few attempts at escape do not succeed, you can probably write your own ticket from there. Well, that finishes our little martial arts tour of the galaxy. I hope you found it as interesting as I did. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.